Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida, it better be sunny, and there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast, you can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Tuesday, November 8th, and after a wild day of football, we're ready for a surprisingly spicy trip to the waiver wire with the Marquess of man coverage, Andy Behrens. And that was a lot of alliterations beyond the Marquess thing there. Never heard of that. Don't know what that means. Don't know where you rank at this point, Andy. But hey. Welcome to the show, buddy. How you doing?
Yeah, this one actually feels like a fake title that has no royal meaning whatsoever. Like the rest of the royals would throw me out of the club. Marquess. This is doing nothing for me. Not only, by the way, a wild day of football, but like a wild day after the day of football. So yes. We've had some fun stuff happen.
We absolutely have. So let's just get right into it. Scott and I had an extended conversation about the Colts on the Sunday night recap show. I said that I was going to put my entire in the Care Don't Care recap article, Andy. I rarely like to throw an entire team in the don't care section, but I was willing to do it with the Colts. Well, the Colts also told us this morning that they don't care about their team any longer because, look, Scott and I, again, we talked a lot about, okay, the week nine Colts looked like a team that was just playing out the string, but I'm like, it's freaking week nine. Okay. Like you can't just like start giving up on the season in week nine. That's a little ridiculous. Like, and then, you know, Scott says they are playing out the string. And then at the end of it, it's like, okay, well, is Frank Reich going to be around for this? The answer is no, he is not going to be around for this. The Colts fire Frank Reich this morning, which was, I would say, a mild surprise just because he has a winning record. Like, he's not Matt Rhule. Like, everybody knew Matt Rhule was going to get fired in the middle of the season, okay? Nobody really thought, like, Frank Reich was going to get fired in the middle of the season. But that wasn't even the most surprising news of the day, Andy, because I don't even know how to bring this in. Former Colts center and current ESPN analyst Jeff Saturday has been named the interim head coach. I believe this is the first time in NFL history that somebody who is not on the coaching staff, and by the way, this is a coaching staff that they just fired their offensive coordinator last week, which in kind of like a scapegoat move, Marcus Brady is out. They have two former head coaches on the team in a guy we have mutual ties to, John Fox, and Gus Bradley. They also have Ventrone, their special teams coordinator, Zach Kiefer, mentioned him as like a rising potential head coaching candidate. No, they go past all that, bring in old favorite Jeff Saturday. Again, a guy who was on TV like last week, Jeff Saturday. Now he's the head. I would love to know what the conversation between Jim Mersay and Jeff Saturday was to become the interim head coach of this team. Andy, where do you want to start?
Yeah, I when I heard this news, I was actually watching I was actually watching SportsCenter, and Hannah Storm announced it and was clearly stunned. And it was all she could do to not giggle at the news, because obviously Jeff Saturday is a colleague. And hey, to his credit, like, everybody who's worked with him seems to really love him, right? Like, that much is really clear. There's a lot of respect for Jeff Saturday. Everybody likes the guy. This feels like this is the shit that happens in the NBA, right? Like, a team's going nowhere, head coach gets fired middle of the season. There's like three assistants on the bench who have a combined 104 years of head coaching experience, and the team just goes out and instead hires like a former, recently retired, beloved point guard or something, right? With absolutely no head coaching experience. So that's pretty wild. He does have 3 years of experience as the head coach of, I don't remember the name of the school. It's a Christian academy in Georgia, right? He went 20-16 as a high school coach in the state of Georgia.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, but Hebron Christian Academy team in a town of someplace I've never heard of in Georgia. Okay. I mean, which, by the way, I doubled back on so many things this morning, but the fact that Schefter felt the need to, or unironically just put that at the end of the announcement, like,
yes,
dude.
One of the other wild things about this was the manner in which Jim Irsay announced it on Twitter, like the tweet that he sent out with just the generic photo of a Colts helmet that simply said, "We have parted ways with Frank Reich," as if like that is almost the text that you send to your spouse when you're like, "Hey, I'm going to try a new phone provider or let's try a new grocery store," or like, it was just so matter of fact. So that's pretty wild. No thanking of Frank Reich. It is crazily
handled. And then
his
tweet announcing the Jeff Saturday hiring, at least Jim Irsay had the decency to do it, like to do a picture there of Jeff Saturday in like a Colts colored polo, I'm guessing talking to the team at the facility, not in a freaking suit on NFL Live or something on ESPN.
You have to wonder, and perhaps by the time people listen to this, there will be more reporting on the hire. Hard to believe they didn't talk to Peyton Manning before that, right? If they were going to go like a former player route, I don't know that this is the former player you would start with. Obviously, he has O-line experience, and the O-line has been a bit of a disaster. Maybe that's the one thing they hope that he can accomplish over the balance of the season. I don't know, man. It's wild. There's almost no one left with the team currently who has any play calling experience whatsoever. I have no idea what the offense is going to look like. They just, as you know, they just played a game in which they gained 121 total net yards and scored 3 points, right? So like, it's as bad as it can possibly get.
Quarterback didn't complete a pass until like midway through the second quarter.
You and I were talking about this on Twitter. Do they hold to this weird commitment they made to start Sam Ellinger for the rest of the season? Because I almost glossed over it when they initially announced that they were shifting from Matt Ryan to him, because it seemed so sensible that you could move on from Matt Ryan. That was kind of bold, but it was probably the right thing to do. But they immediately announced him as the rest of season starter, which is also crazy because he had no experience. You didn't know what this was going to look like. It was such a ringing endorsement. And like, if things go sideways, then they're sideways for like months, which just seems in hindsight nuts.
I completely agree with you, right? Because I said this on the show with Scott last night. It's like, when they announced that they're going to start him for the rest of the season, my reaction was immediately, are you sure about that? Are you sure you're going to start him for the rest of the season? Because that is a full on, like, it's a tank move. I think it has to be a tank move. And, you know, at the time, it was kind of reported like, okay, ownership is likely pulling the strings here for this, like benching Matt Ryan and putting Sam Ellinger. Well, okay, now we know ownership is fully like, not even just like they've got their fingers in it. You know, Jim Irsay is like elbows deep in what's going on right now at this point. Okay, pulling the strings, which is fine. You know what? It's his team. Okay, he's his family has spent the money to buy this team, and that's his right to do whatever the hell he wants with it. Like, okay, that's the way things work. Okay, you buy something, it's your thing to mess around with, right? We certainly know that is the case.
But we just had an off-season controversy about how like teams are expected to at least, you know, outwardly look like they're trying to be competitive. And this is straight up tanking and basically telling the rest of the league that they're tanking.
And that's what's so crazy about it. And what I think honestly is unfortunate for the rest of the guys on the roster, because I'm not trying to be mean to Sam Ehlinger, but he's a sixth round pick. Okay. It's not as if like we are now going to start, if he was even a third round guy, like, you know, like Malik Willis. Perfect. We're going to talk about Malik Willis here in a second. But if the Titans came out tomorrow and said, we're going to start Malik Willis the rest of the season, I think we'd all more than raise an eyebrow at it. We'd be like, are you serious? Like, are you really going to do that? That's kind of wild. Like, you're going to bench a guy and Ryan Tannehill, you know, he doesn't deserve to be benched. And you're going to, like, that would be a pretty crazy decision, but at least it'd be like, all right, well, he's a third round pick and they're just looking for the future. Yeah. Sam Ehlinger is like a sixth round pick, in what was it, 2021? Was this rookie season? Like, and also he has no, again, not trying to be mean, but he has no tangible, like, this is it. Like, everybody tried to talk him into the fact that he's been like oh, he's going to bring mobility. He scrambled 7 times for 50 yards in 2 starts. Like, it's not, that has not, and he's taken, by the way, he's taken a ton of sacks, just like Matt Ryan took a bunch of sacks. So I don't really get what the point of this is. And for the other guys on the roster, it's like, okay, this guy comes in from ESPN. And look, Jeff Saturday is a Colts legend. There's going to be some respect there for sure, because he's played the game. This guy comes in, you know, from ESPN, isn't within the building every day, has to build these relationships now with this guy. We're still going to start this sixth round pick for the rest of the season while we have a guy, at least with Matt Ryan. It's like, Matt Ryan's a respected veteran in the league. He's been around. Like, whether they know, like, they know they're going to lose now at this point, but now it's like, they're, what I said last night, they're an unserious operation. Now they do an incredibly unserious thing now to double down on that. I don't know how guys like Michael Pittman, how guys like Jonathan Taylor, and, you know, some of the guys on the offensive line aren't like, what the F are we doing here? And that's got to bleed into the product on the field for the rest of the way.
I'm afraid that we have to worry about, and maybe this is just, you know, got him in a couple leagues and I'm, you know, running through possible outcomes here. But like, I'm afraid we have to worry about like that, because the team is so blatantly tanking right now. Like, do they just sit Jonathan Taylor at some point? He's not.
I think that's on the
He does not have an injury that you would like. This isn't like Joe Mixon the year that he sat out games at the end of the year. And this isn't, you know, any number of cases where players have sat because they had like, you know, a severe high ankle sprain, a foot issue that really needed rest. This is not like a major issue to the best of my knowledge. And he was a maybe for week 9. So it would be wild to actually sit him at this point for the rest of the year. But it does feel like he's maybe one injury away from the, because you also don't want to, you know, how many touches do you want to feed Jonathan Taylor in what is already a lost season, you know? So I think that's a real possibility right now. So if you weren't, I guess if you weren't shopping him before, maybe you have to now.
Yeah, I think it's worth the conversation. Absolutely. Like, there is a 100% chance that if in 2 weeks he's still not feeling 100%, they just go ahead and throw him on IR, which, again, this is crazy. We're heading into week 10. Like, this is not week 16. This is not week freaking 15 or something.
Yeah.
We have a long way to go. We just got into November. The season is pretty much two more months. And this team is going to not play one of their best players for the next 2 months. It does seem crazy, but hiring a guy off TV also seems crazy in the middle of the freaking season. Like, I just can't say enough how unprecedented and wild this is. And also, like, I don't even think it's really, I don't think it's like cute or endearing either. I think there's been like some talk about that because obviously folks are going to talk about, and I know it's already out there about, you know, how like minority head coaching candidates, this will be just another thing. If you thought like the Josh McCown thing was egregious, this might be even more egregious, right? Other than the fact other than the fact that he has a history with the team, and like Schefter included that he's a consultant with the team in his initial announcement, which, again, he's not like on the coaching roster on the website, period. Like, he's not on the coaching staff. So that there's going to be feelings about that. I also, again, bring it back to the guys on the field. Like, if you're a guy, bring back to Michael Pittman, and not just because I really like Michael Pittman, but I'm just using him as an example because this is a fantasy podcast and people have him on their fantasy teams. If you're a guy like Michael Pittman and, you know, they're going to start this guy, Sam Ehlinger, they're going to fire your head coach in the middle of the season. They're going to bring in this guy who you've probably met maybe a couple times, Jeff Saturday, but you don't have any familiarity with. And, you know, this is supposed to be the middle of your they're going to shut down the other guy on the offense, the other skill position frontline guy in Jonathan Taylor. This is supposed to be your prime earning years. And that's what I come back to. It feels obviously unfair to other coaching candidates out there. It also feels unfair to the guys on the roster as well.
Oh, it absolutely does. This is a wild thing that, again, you see this, like, this exact scenario plays out in the NBA. This happens. I can't, certainly in my time covering and tracking the NFL, I can't think of another thing that corresponds to this in any way. It's pretty wild. You're so right. It's a wild message to send to the rest of the team. And this is also a team that, like, came into the season with, hey, we can win. We should win this division. We should probably win this division.
Yeah.
We're playoff contenders. We're favorites. Like that was, it was, yeah. It is wild how things have swung for this franchise.
Yeah, they went off the rails rather quickly. Well, we will get back on the rails for the rest of the show, because I think we could probably sit here and talk for another hour about this Jeff Saturday, Frank Reich thing. And, you know, by the way, Frank Reich, he'll rebound at some point. Things did not go well. And we didn't even talk about, like, how this all, like, I got this news this morning when I was on my wife and I walk, you know, like 3 miles every morning or whatever. We were in the middle of that, and I was like, well, for the Colts fire Frank Reich, and she's like, what is that about? So I had to, like, bring it all the way back to, like, the drafting of Andrew Luck, the retirement of it. Like, we could go a long way on, like, the sliding door moments for Frank Reich and all that, but it seems like a good guy. I think he's a good offensive coach. He'll probably get another shot at this. And it's crazy to think Frank Reich wasn't even supposed to be the head coach of the Colts. That was supposed to be Josh McDaniels. Right. Oh, man. What? Like, yeah, we could go another 2 hours. Let me rephrase that. We could go another 2 hours, not another hour on this. But we'll stop here. We'll go back to the rest of the show. I don't know how to transition out of all that into a pretty typical news item, like Romeo Doubs has a high ankle sprain and Aaron Jones is fine to play in week 10. But Andy, those do seem to be the realities that we're dealing with the broken Green Bay Packers offense.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers offense could also be its own podcast series, right? Like, Aaron Rodgers coming off. I haven't looked at the Aaron Rodgers game log. I can't believe he's played another game that poorly in like a decade. That was unbelievable. And so much of it was on him. There were obviously hilarious misfires to Sammy Watkins, right? Like, it looked like Sammy Watkins had just joined the team that day. Talk about, like, never on the same page. So there's, like, Christian Watson gets hurt again in the game. There's just nothing behind Romeo Doubs. It's Doubs, it's Lazard, and there ain't no help coming. There's nothing else in this receiving core. And it would be one thing if Aaron Rodgers, you know, was clearly playing very well and he was just vastly superior to his receiving core, but this was, I mean, he hit an opposing player in the face and got picked off. And, like, everything was under... I don't know how many balls he underthrew on Sunday. It was brutal. This was the primary game that I was watching because I thought it was going to be a shootout, because I thought it was going to be really fun for fantasy. It was an absolute nightmare on both sides. No points, no yards, so many takeaways. Just an absolutely brutal watch. So I don't... Like, I don't have a guy. When Romeo Doubs goes down, I don't have a guy for you to, like, go out and get. There's no fantasy takeaway here, except that, wow, that really sucks if you had Doubs, because there's just no, like, I'm not going to tell you to go get Sammy Watkins. He was brutal. Alan Lazard is rostered and that's it.
Yeah, Sammy Watkins is probably, like, the leader in the clubhouse for the enough already award of this season. Like, really enough already with Sammy Watkins. It would be nice if Christian Watson could not get injured and we could see more of him, because, I mean, the Packers are a developmental team right now. Like, that's where they're at. They're not making the playoffs, okay? Like, the Giants they have too good of a record. The Seahawks have too good of a record, like, in terms of NFC, like, wild, you know, they're just not going to make the playoffs, period.
There was an argument to be made, and I guess it's good that they didn't do it, because they still have Aaron Rodgers in what should be, you know, the back end of his peak. But there was certainly an argument for the Packers to be sellers at the trade deadline, and they obviously weren't.
No, they almost bought the greatest receiver core of all time, actually, is what they almost were able to acquire Darren Waller, Chase Claypool, Jerry Jeudy, and DJ Moore. Almost. Yeah. By the way, like, there's one for sure good player in that group, and it's DJ Moore. So I'm not sure that those headlines were doing the work they thought. Whoever leaked those from Green Bay, I don't think they were doing the work that you thought they were doing. Yeah, you're right. There's really no fantasy takeaway here. And I'm almost kind of glad that we don't have to, if Aaron Jones truly is, like, fine, he's going to play in week 10. I'm almost kind of glad we don't have to do a round of, like, all right, where are we ranking AJ Dillon, who has been, he's been terrible this year. Like, no excusing it. That draft with, like, Jordan Love, Josiah DeGuara. I kind of forgot he was like a third round pick for this team, and you know, he ain't doing anything at tight end either. It's like, that was a brutal draft. AJ Dillon looked like the one salvageable piece of it, and he's had a really poor season so far this year. I'm kind of glad we don't have to do a round of that. Gut instinct,
he had shots at the goal line against the Lions too. Like, it's not like he didn't have opportunities in week 9, didn't take advantage of him. And like, it's notable watching him run how long it takes him to like gear down and change direction on the field is pretty wild. It's not he sometimes doesn't look like a running back. Like, he's you know, he's fun when he's just getting north south, but it takes him forever to change direction.
I saw somebody say his best plays of this year have come as a lead blocker, and that one stung. Again, I think I said this on one of the podcasts leading up to last week, but I'll just say it again. Like, all of our alarm bells should have been going off when Aaron Rodgers is like, I think I can get both AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones to the 50 catch club. It's like, if that's what your offense is going to look like this year, your offense is going to suck. Just a heads up. If you got two running backs catching 50 plus passes, it's not going to look good. The Packers offense has sucked so far. Andy, gut instinct call here. Aaron Rodgers, is he on this team next year? And if the answer is no, how does he get off it? Trade, retirement? The floor is yours.
Wow. I hadn't really considered this. It certainly wouldn't shock me if he were to retire, right? Like, he's a, he's probably going to go on like another offseason sabbatical, soul searching inner journey somewhere. And who knows what his perspective is going to be when he comes back from that. Like, it's hard to take a lot of the things that he says seriously, but I do take him at his word that he was legitimately at a crossroads a handful of years ago. I can imagine him. I can imagine him retiring. I don't know that I can imagine another team. You know, bunch of young quarterback talent in this draft class. There's probably going to be some teams that are near the top of the draft that aren't actually going to be in on a quarterback. So, like, I don't know. You've got opportunities to draft someone young. Aaron Rodgers, while he has been undeniably great, comes with some baggage. So I don't know that he's like anyone's plan A anymore necessarily. He's probably still on this team if he's still in the league. But I guess I'd put the chances of him retiring at, I don't know, that just listening to him in post-game comments, it feels like 20%, 25%. It definitely feels like a possibility.
Yeah, the thing, his contract is an absolute albatross. And I have no idea like what they... I just don't know what the future of the Packers looks like, but I know that we will not be discussing them as a high quality fantasy offense the rest of the way. A couple other things here quickly. This one came from Ian Rapport just, you know, this morning. Bills quarterback Josh Allen's likely to be limited this week because of an elbow injury suffered late in Sunday's loss. But as of now, it's considered a situation to monitor rather than an ailment that would keep him out of the game. Sources say he's still undergoing tests to be sure. Any level of, I've lived through the Jake DeLome experience, the Tommy John experience. We've all lived through the Ben Roethlisberger experience with his elbow injury. Just something I think to definitely keep an eye on. And, I don't know. You have any level of panic over this?
Yeah, it's in the back of my head a little bit. He did still put the ball in the air a million yards and hit Gabe Davis in the numbers after suffering the injury, right? So I think he's going to be fine. He seemed to be downplaying it immediately afterwards, but that's in the moments following a tough loss. And maybe it's the kind of thing that doesn't really bark until the following day. Not sure. It was clearly bothering him on the field and not in the way that, like, sometimes Aaron Rodgers wants you to know that something is bothering him. Like, that's not really Josh Allen, right? Josh Allen isn't the guy who's like showing you his injury all game. So a little bit of concern. But it's a case where he was so dismissive of it following the game that I'm cautiously optimistic, I guess.
The kind of nice thing about the Bills offense is that it's a little bit emerged sneakily as like Stephon Diggs and nobody else. Scott and I asked last night if we were allowed to have the Gabe Davis conversation with the Gabe Davis bros about how things have not gone well outside of really just one eruption game. He's been fine in a couple others and absolutely nothing in four others. But, Isaiah McKenzie not working really as the slot receiver. They haven't turned over to Khalil Shakir. Their backfield's kind of split between a lot of dudes right now. So at least for the time being, it's like, okay, if Josh Allen's going to be limited for the next couple of weeks, you're not going to not play Stephon Diggs, and everybody else you can kind of just move out of your like starting consideration at this point, because they really, you know, other than Davis, who I'm not going to totally give up on, and Dawson Knox, like the same way, those guys obviously still have high ceilings, but you're sort of going to view them as boom bust, but you kind of already were.
I feel like the right take to have had about Gabe Davis coming into the season was sort of that middle ground take that you had, which was
this Gabe Davis centrist. Yes.
yeah. Like that was the actual right take. Like his worst games are pretty bad. Like his worst games, and he just had one at the end of the regular season last year, are pretty bad and pretty inefficient, and he does not catch half the passes coming his way. And then his best games are, you win, and the Bills win, and, he gets loose for, like, multiple touchdowns. That's basically what we've seen, and that will probably deliver a really bumpy wide receiver two-ish kind of season, right? And that's just... He's sort of the player that we should have thought he was coming into the year. The other people who are going to probably end up right are the folks who were saying that Dawson Knox is in for the worst touchdown regression. And I talked myself into this idea that, you know what, Josh Allen's going to throw 45 touchdown passes. And if he does that, there's no way that Dawson Knox isn't catching like seven of them. And that makes him a tight end one. And it's just not happening.
Yeah, I was on that side. Like, I don't mean to say I'm smarter than everybody. I think folks that listen to this podcast should know that I'm not that guy, because I was definitely on that Dawson Knox thing with you. He's 20 catches for 183 yards and two touchdowns so far this season. Like, and I did draft a ton of Dawson Knox, and like his stats look like a goal line back. Okay, you know, like two carries for 10 yards and a touchdown, except those are two catches for 10 yards and a touchdown, right? Like that's how the Dawson Knox experience has gone. But I just think the Gabe Davis one, it's like, that's the player he is. That's the producer he is. That happens with these guys sometimes. And there wasn't a lot of room, and there was nothing, no evidence on, I think when you actually watched him on film, that there was a lot of room for growth there. But, I think he's good. I think he's still, fine player that offers a lot of tactical value to the Bills. But I do think their passing game needs somebody else to emerge beyond Stephon Diggs, and certainly needs Josh Allen's elbow to be fine. Last thing here before we recap Sunday Night Football, NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reports that Panthers will start PJ Walker on Thursday night against the Falcons. They've also activated Sam Darnold from injured reserve. I still think there's a chance we see Sam Darnold before the end of the season, which is like not something I enjoy saying, but I think even though PJ Walker had like the poop your pants game of all time against the Bengals, which is not the first time he's had this type of game in the NFL, by the way, I think this is probably the right decision.
PJ Walker also made the throw of the year 2 weeks ago. So maybe he's like, he kind of fits with the Gabe Davis discussion of his best moments are like as good as are breathtaking, and his worst moments, which happen with greater frequency, are pretty damn bad. there's no good options here, right? Like, I can't believe we're talking about a team that has to choose between the worst version of Baker Mayfield, a recently rehabbed Sam Darnold, and PJ Walker. There's no good solution there. PJ Walker is at least fun. Darnold and Mayfield have just been absolute misery. So I kind of hope they stick with Walker. I made a decent sized bid last week on Walker in Charles Robinson's 20 team super league. So like I need him as a bye week filler at some point, because quarterbacks just simply can't be found. So I'm hoping he's able to hold on for like a couple weeks.
Oh, there you go. All right. Sunday Night Football, Chiefs 20, Titans 17. I want to start with the Titans because I know they lost the game. And I know Titans fans are pissed about some of the officiating. Whatever. Okay. Titans fans pissed about a lot of stuff. We'll get to that in a second. I want to start with the Titans, though, because my God, like, I cannot remember a team that I think the Titans are a good team. They're in the AFC South. We get it. The AFC South stinks. But the Titans win that thing every year. Mike Vrabel is such a damn good coach. That was a really, really good defensive game plan that they rolled out against this team. They just got beat by a superstar in the end. That happens. But I cannot remember a team that I felt like such good like vibes about organizationally that just offers you literally next to nothing in fantasy, because it is Derrick Henry and quite literally nobody else that like no receiver that should be ranked. Like when we do our fantasy pros, rankings, it's like, make sure you go after you get the default inputted in, just go ahead and click XXXX on every Titans like name in there just to get them out of the rankings, because there's no receiver that should be even in like the top. What do you rank? Like 60, 65, 70 guys at the receiver, something like that?
Usually by the end of the week at receiver, I've probably got like 80 guys in there because like I remember some guys as the week goes along, and I start dragging some people in because other guys are missing practice, right? So I probably end up 75 to 80, something like that. And, you know, it's been a lot of weeks when I had Robert Woods as like a top, you know, first he'd be like 50. And then he fell to like 60. And now, I don't know, is he a top 70 receiver? I mean, it was Malik Willis. But like, this wasn't all on Malik Willis. Malik Willis made some good throws that hit people in the hands, and they didn't pull him in, right? Woods finishes with zero catches on two targets. Nobody had more than two catches in this game. Like, Austin Hooper's two catches led the team. That's a little
no rough. Wide receiver caught a pass. You know, Chris Conley, right. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, none of those guys.
Conley probably came the closest. Like there was a notable ball to him, sideline route, hit him in both hands, nothing. So like, but he's, what are you going to do? He's Chris Conley. Like these are your options. Right. There are no great talents on that team in that receiving core.
No, like we'll see what happens when Treylon Burks. I've got my questions about Treylon Burks as a player, like with some of the route running stuff, but he's going to make some of those catches that we saw, like Chris Conley not make last night, like some of those go ball contested catch stuff. Like this team certainly needs Ryan Tannehill back under center, but man, their receiver core is just, it's strikingly weak. And, you know, there are many Titans fans that like, I know AJ Brown was even tweeting this game, which, like, come on, AJ, man, like you broke up with your ex. Okay. Like, don't go stalk her Instagram or whatever, you know, like, let it go. Not what I would personally do, but I'm not going here to tell AJ Brown how to live his life. Like, if you even dare like tweet about AJ Brown during a Titans game or even like tangentially in related to the Titans, like Titans fans will immediately remind you that like we offered him a contract, but it's like, well, I don't know how to remind you this, fellas, but how the market works is that like if somebody's going to pay you more, which the Eagles were going to pay him $25 million, the Titans were not. That's where you go to, especially when the team is going to willingly give you there. So I think the Titans are going to be fine long term without AJ Brown. It's just this year there's not going to be anything pretty much in fantasy. So don't get so upset, Titans fans. It's just, this is the team you're rolling with this year. I think the team knew that this was a possibility, and they're kind of like retooling while still being competitive. But for us fantasy dorks, like the only thing that matters is Derrick Henry, and that's it.
Titans could have got in on the Chase Claypool sweepstakes, but they didn't. Bears won it.
For the best that they did not, by the way. They did.
He would
actually need anyone
be a perfect
else.
Titans receiver. Oh my
I gosh. Was just going to say, they don't need, not that I'm trying to tell you the guy your team shipped off a second round pick for is going to be like Chris Conley in 7 years, but some of the same folks on Twitter who are bagging on the Bears for, or applauding the Bears for shipping off a linebacker, a really, really good linebacker, getting a second round pick and then sending a second round pick for an athletic receiver. Some of the same folks that were definitely Chris Conley bros. I'm just going to say that.
It's a good call.
Chiefs, talk about them. No running game. We knew that was not going to be the case. We don't care about that backfield. The Titans are the best run defense in the NFL. Our guy Juju, though, Andy, 10 catches, 12 targets, 88 yards. He's Juju. Like, he looks like Juju in this offense, a guy who's going to win underneath, who's going to be physical. And I think his role has stabilized in a receiver core that's otherwise pretty unstable, because now like MVS's snaps and routes are down, like Sky Moore's a little bit up, Kadarius Toney's in the mix now, but I'm pretty sure this is just going to be for the rest of the season. You know, Mecole Hardman doesn't look like a guy who's ready to give his job up either, right? Like, that's the thing, when we're trying to get Sky Moore on the field, we're trying to get Kadarius Toney on the field, like, are the Chiefs really just going to give Mecole Hardman's job up? Because he still made some plays last night.
Yeah, so a couple things here. Number one, like the signature game in terms of the Mahomes MVP argument this year. Just really remarkable performance, given the fact that, like, you know, you mentioned they didn't have a run game. Like, their longest run by a running back was 3 yards. The running back who led them in rushing, it was 4 carries for 5 yards, right? Like, this wasn't just like, bummer, the running backs didn't do anything. This was like shockingly poor production from a running game. Juju, I was just looking at numbers on yards after the catch this season, and he's obviously, he's had three tremendous weeks in a row. He's now fourth in the NFL in yards after the catch. He's got 315 yards after the catch. Like, that whole list is a who's good at the receiver position list, right? Like, Cooper Kupp is on top. Justin Jefferson is second. Tyreek Hill is third. Then it's Juju. Then it's Jalen Waddle. Then it's Debo. Then it's AJ Brown. Then it's Diggs. Like, that's a good player list. And Juju's right in the middle of it. He's playing very well. Like, it took a few weeks. It took a little time. But he's definitely been, like, you know, wherever you drafted him, there's been a profit there. I think the Hardman usage is super interesting, because, like, it's not just that, you know, you can look at these, all the five touchdowns over the last 3 weeks and say, well, maybe that's a little fluky. Maybe he's just, like, a pillar of what they do in goal-to-go situations now, though, because he's, four of those five touchdowns are, like, shorties. They're 8 yards or less. These are, like, goal-line situations in which he's scoring. And it's probably the best use of him, because, like, when you send him deep, when he's out there running, like, deep routes, intermediate routes, that's where, like, some of the only instances that we've seen in the last, you know, in the Patrick Mahomes era of him just absolutely not being on the same page with a receiver, it's almost always with Mecole Hardman. But this quick hit stuff to Hardman, where he just gets to be elusive and he just gets to be, like, faster than anybody else on the field, like, that's working. These have been really fun plays the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's how this offense is going to look the rest of the season. Like, Kelsey's going to do his thing, 10 catches, 17 targets, 106 yards. He had some, obviously, signature moments in that game. Mahomes is going to do some superstar stuff. I mean, to take that game over from, like, a rushing perspective, and again, I know Titans fans, some questionable calls, whatever, I don't care. You know, Mahomes takes that game over for his legs, but, like, Juju does his thing. I think Juju will continue doing his thing, but everybody else is going to be, like, a total crapshoot. Like, if you had to start MVS, like, I talked about him on FFL as, like, a bye week desperation filler. Well, you know, getting into the MVS game, you might either get four catches for 111 yards, or you're going to get what you got last night, which is, you know, nothing. So I think Hardman will continue to pop up. Like, they'll get Tony a little more involved. Like, Sky Moore's still going to be there too, but, like, all of those guys, it's going to be really tough to not just straight up cannibalize each other. And I think the fact that Mecole Hardman is playing and playing pretty well is really a problem for, you know, nobody cares about Sky Moore in redraft anymore. But, like, if you want Kadarius Toney to get on the field, like, he's not taking Juju's job. He's going to have to take Hardman's job, because he can't really play X receiver like MVS. And I just don't know when that happens at this point.
I feel like Hardman is actually, like, a sneaky problem for Pacheco and Edwards-Helaire too, right? Because he's just been so damn effective. Like, when they get inside the 5 yard line, like, they just put him, you know, they get him sort of isolated on the perimeter, and he makes a move and he's in the end zone. Like, that's super effective, and I kind of feel like we're going to see a bunch of it the rest of the season.
All right, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll run through the waiver wire ads of the week.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, Andy, let's start at the running back position. Give us your list of guys and, you know, kind of spotlight one or two players that you think are really key here.
There's one player that I want to sort of exclude from, like, he kind of breaks the roles for who we normally talk about here. And that's Jeff Wilson. I want to mention him a little bit, because his roster percentage is over 50%. Again, we don't normally discuss guys that are already on a team in a majority of Yahoo leagues, but I sort of feel like some of those teams, I don't know, tens of thousands of those teams are probably, like, deadbeat squads that have just left Jeff Wilson on the roster after he was an obvious drop following the McCaffrey trade, right? Like, I don't have a good reason why he's actually rostered in over 50% of Yahoo leagues, so I just want to talk about him a little bit. Because he was also out there, like, some of the leagues that I play in, they're, like, hometowny and, you know, 10 teams, 12 teams, he was actually available in those. I think almost everybody thought he was a little bit of a low-key winner after the trade deadline, right? Because he moves from a place where he was buried. Like, he certainly wasn't going to really work into the mix in a meaningful way with McCaffrey. And then he had an Eli Mitchell problem too. But then he shows up in Miami and he's familiar with the offense, and he's just one Raheem Mostert injury away from relevance. But, and then immediately, week one, like, with the team for a few days, plays like 48% of the snaps and is already basically in a 50-50 job share with Mostert. Found the end zone, really nifty move after a short catch in a really fun game against the Bears. So like, he's going to be relevant rest of season as like an RB2 in a deep league or a flex in almost any other league, because this is more than I expected him to play initially. And I think if he's out there in your league, he's probably the priority at running back. But again, a little bit over 50%, but I think he's the player that I am most interested in. Other guys that I wrote about, we find a place to talk about Rashad White every week. I think he's graduated from the stash to the guys that we could just say, you know, he's not really a stash anymore. Like, I can almost like squint and say, hey, bad bye week, I might play him. Because he's played 35% of the snaps in like four of the last six games. He's got a little life to him. Didn't have some splashy line or anything like that in the Rams game. But he's a good player, talented receiver, who would obviously blow up if anything happened to Fournette. Other guys that I wrote about this week, Jaylen Warren, and that was really just an indictment of Najee Harris, who's been terrible. Chuba Hubbard probably coming back pretty soon. He was at least a limited participant in practice last week, so he's probably going to re-enter the mix. They've got Atlanta this week. And the last guy that I think deserves a little bit of discussion is Latavius Murray. There was an initial, you know, post-trade deadline reaction, maybe isolated to like the fantasy industry on Twitter, that was very pro Chase Edmonds after he got flipped to Denver. I just want to remind people that Chase Edmonds has been the worst running back in the NFL this year. Like, yeah. I just said Najee Harris has been really bad, but like Chase Edmonds is, you know, less than 3 yards a carry and the lowest rate of yards after contact by a lot of any back in the NFL. And he was doing that in an offense where he was getting
a
lot of
Don't forget he can't catch either, Andy.
And apparently the new receiving specialist out of the backfield for Denver can't catch either. Like, I don't know.
Leads all running backs in drops by a lot at 33%.
He's just been absolutely brutal. And so I think Latavius basically holds on to the role that he's already had. And he is actually the least rostered member of the Denver backfield right now.
Yeah, that's a good call. I don't love the idea. Well, it's certainly like Latavius Murray now going against the Titans, who we just talked about. Great, great run defense. Like, if you have to start Latavius Murray, your team is probably not in a good spot generally, but certainly this week. But I do like that you highlight here that he gets the Raiders coming up. Like, the Raiders defense, my God, what a disaster show. So that should be a good spot for Murray. But man, it's going to take a lot for me to get excited about that backfield. He's probably the most boring member here on the list that you have. But I get what you
highlighted. It's fair.
Wide receiver, though, does have some more interesting names to it this week.
Yeah, we discussed Mecole Hardman within the context of the Sunday night game. Like, again, and he's rostered in about 48% of Yahoo leagues right now, so he's barely eligible for this conversation. But 5 touchdowns in his last 3 games, they're just using the heck out of him at the goal line. Like, it's 4 of these 5 touchdowns have been 8 yards or less. Like, the score on Sunday night was something that you can imagine being repeated throughout the season. And like, it's Kansas City, so like, I feel like we can get excited about touchdowns here, because the team is going to average over 30 points per game, right? They have a wizard of a quarterback, and there are going to be some blow-up Hardman weeks. So I think he's probably the most interesting name. Probably got to talk about Terrace Marshall again, and I get it.
Yeah.
If you don't want any investment in the Panthers offense, that's prudent. That is certainly one way to proceed, and I understand it. But this is like, it's 2 pretty useful games in a row. 2 weeks ago, it was 9 targets and 87 yards against Atlanta. He's going to face them again this weekend. He found the end zone for the first time in his NFL career on Sunday. That was good to see. And a point that you've made about Terrace Marshall a whole bunch of times is that you know, they're playing him out of the slot last year. I just looked up the numbers. I think it was 177 snaps out of the slot last season. He entered week 9 having only played 9 slot snaps. Like, they've just ditched that, and it's for the best. And he's pretty clearly the number 2 receiver for a team that is not always going to support 2 or even 1 viable fantasy receivers. But I think he's pretty interesting as a deep league ad. Other guys who are going to be out there, every receiver on the Giants. Currently, I would have the most interest in Wandale Robinson and Darius Slayton. They've got Houston next, and then they've got Detroit. Those are very friendly matchups, so not going to be a surprise if one or both of those players has a day at some point in the next 2 weeks. And I think we need to take a look at DeAndre Carter, too. I don't think you're going to get some blow-up game out of DeAndre Carter, and he's really only getting heavy usage because Keenan Allen is injured, but there's no end in sight to that, and Mike Williams also injured, and there's no obvious end in sight to that either. So it's like Josh Palmer and DeAndre Carter are pretty steadily looking at like 7 to 10 targets a game for the foreseeable future. You can't get Palmer anymore, but you can get Carter.
I think all of these guys have some decent staying power, especially in like multiple flex leagues, you know, start three wide receiver leagues. I really think Marshall, I feel pretty good about him kind of turning his career around as a pure outside receiver. Talked about that a little bit last night with Scott. You know, I do want to spotlight the Giants guys just because, like, Wandale Robinson, Darius Slayton, totally agree with your analysis. Like, those guys should be, I think they should be rostered, both of them. But if you had to pick between the two, because they going into this, well, obviously they were on bye last week, going into their bye, they each had an identical target share the last 3 weeks. But I believe, I'm going off the top of my head here, Darius Slayton, 33% of the air yards, Wandale Robinson, like 11% of the air yards in that same stretch, which just shows they could not be more different as wide receivers. Yeah. So picking between the two guys, which one would you prioritize?
I think Wandale's going to be type thing. He's going to be targeted near the line of scrimmage a lot, right? Exciting player, electric player, maybe a little bit Rondale Moore-ish, I guess. But
yes, just good comparison.
Yeah, just that. So it would have to be the sort of league, you know, have to be like a full point PPR league where I'd probably be a little bit more interested in Wandale. I don't think there's a ton of upside. I mean, that's not breaking news, but I don't think there's a ton of upside for any Giants receiver. I don't think we're going to see like a 4 or 5 touchdown game from Daniel Jones. I doubt that's in the cards, even with great matchups on deck. I'm a little bit more comfortable with Darius Slayton's floor. I think Wandale's ceiling might be exciting, but it probably comes down to a format, right? Like if it's half PPR, I might lean Slayton. If it's full PPR, I might lean Wandale.
Wandale, Rondale, that's going to be fun because that's a really good comparison I think I've made before, and I think like everybody will make going forward. That should be a real fun one to mess up the rest of the way. Let's move to quarterbacks here. Again, no season saver in this bunch, but some interesting guys for at least matchup plays.
No, the right answer was last week and the week before, Justin Fields, right? Like, and that he's going to end up having been the waiver.
How you feeling about Fields, bro? I mean, ooh, so exciting. Like,
I broke out the Fields shirt for this podcast.
Nice.
I'm just super excited about it because it's, you know, and like the Green Bay game still happened this year and the Washington game still happened and the Giants game and all that. But like, I thought that Fields' best moments last year were the best moments for better. It wasn't a great year for the rookie class of quarterbacks, obviously, but I thought his best moments, the Pittsburgh game, the Niners game, I thought they were the best moments that anybody had from that rookie class. And I mean, nobody in NFL history has had a game exactly like the one that Fields just did, right? Like 178 yards out of a quarterback is crazy. He has 408 rushing yards over the last 4 weeks and made some throws against Miami too. So that was exciting. And then like his next 2 weeks are Detroit and Atlanta. So he's got a great schedule ahead. It's just been really promising. Like I'm going to seem like a guy who like is really focused on, you know, because I think I mentioned somebody's like top end speed on a run, like the next gen stat thing where they're like, oh, we reached 21 miles an hour or whatever. Like, I don't usually think that stuff is important. But like Justin Fields had like 3 of the top, I don't know, 6 speeds or something like that from week 9, which was pretty exciting to see. Like he gets a couple steps and he can be gone. Super exciting game. Miami was spying him, too. That's the other crazy thing. Like they were spying him a lot. And he just dusted off the spy like several times. Just really thrilling game to watch in real time. And it's going to be fun to rewatch too. But he's not our subject because you can't go get him now unless it's a really
shallow league. I got to give you some time to feel good about it though, man. Come on. I mean,
I feel so good about it. And they lost the game, right? Like the Bears are one of those teams that should probably not be in the business of trying to make a playoff run or trying to get to 500 or anything like that. Like, they should care about draft position. They're clearly positioning themselves for that. So, like, a loss in which Justin Fields levels up is just the perfect game for me. So it was great to see. There's no Justin Fields on your waiver wire right now, right? Like, this is a sketchy group that I'm about to name, but I think the most interesting names that are widely available right now, I'd probably start with Jared Goff, because he's facing the Bears this week. He is the guy who gets to throw to Amon-Ra. We like that. You know, hopefully we get to see a little bit more DeAndre Swift on the field. We would like him as well. He also faces Chicago. And Chicago was like a bad defense to begin the season. And they have since ditched Quinn, Roquan, right? Like, they're a bad defense that deliberately got worse. They got carved up by Miami. They got carved up by Dallas. And there is a very good chance that this Detroit Bears game is going to be a bit of a shootout, right? Like, if the total in that game ends up over 50, not going to be much of a surprise. I don't think either defense is going to be able to stop the opponent. Should be like, it'd be a totally meaningless game in the real world and super fun in fantasy. So I think Goff might be a little bit fun this week. The other guys that I mentioned in the column were Daniel Jones, only because he's got, you know, we talked about it with the Giants receivers. He's got Houston coming up, then Detroit. And Garoppolo's got the Chargers, and then he's got Arizona. And, like, Garoppolo is just that, like, I don't know. We could just cut and paste the same comment about Garoppolo every time. His floor is probably 225 and two touchdowns. His ceiling is probably 275 and two touchdowns. Like, he doesn't have a three-touchdown game since 2020, I want to say, like, early in the 2020 season. So it's been a while. You're just not going to get a blow-up game, but he's got great weapons, and he pretty much always gives you one or two scores.
Yeah, I like that call a lot. Let's move to tight ends here. There's at least some interesting young guys we could discuss. One of these guys I think could be a potential every week start. But you go ahead, Andy. Tell the folks out there.
I think the potential every week start, and you can tell me right away if you think this is wrong, but I think it's Greg Dulcich.
Yes, agree.
Yeah, I think that guy could be like a top eight. It's not saying a lot to say that a guy can be top eight fantasy tight end rest of season, because it's like with Mark Andrews injured, it's like Travis Kelce and then just a bunch of dudes. But I do think that Dulcich can be that, because we haven't seen him have a bad game yet. 87 yards last time out, 9 targets the game before, 39-yard touchdown catch in his first NFL game, and he's playing like 80% of the snaps. Like, he's always on the field. This guy's going to be pretty good, and Russell Wilson has been staring at his tight ends all season. So it's a friendly spot for him. He's got Tennessee coming up. That's obviously a generous pass defense. He's got the Raiders after that. So a couple of friendly spots ahead for him. Other guys that I think are kind of interesting, Kate Otten. It was a pretty good game for Kate Otten. Caught the game winner for the Bucks. I don't know what the Cameron Brate situation is. He obviously practiced last week. If he comes back, he is surely going to play, and he's going to muck this up for Otten. But Otten looks like a thing. Like, he looks like a real player. So I think he's pretty interesting. Again, Cameron Brate can still screw that up. And then my way of getting to Justin Fields was going to be a discussion of Cole Kmet, but you allowed me to do that in the quarterback section, which I appreciate. But Kmet scored 3 times over the last 2 games that, you know, easily this past week too. Like, the Bears offense has fixed itself in an important way, and it's made, whatever your plans were for Cole Kmet this season, like, you probably dropped him early in the year, and he's just going to be somebody else's, sort of dumpster dive gold, right? Because he's been pretty good. And I can imagine Cole Kmet sneaking into the top 10, top 12 as well.
Yeah, I like that call a lot. Maybe this will be, that'll be a, you're right and wrong within the course of one season.
Yes.
The Cole Kmet thing, if he ends up hitting, because, like, it could not have been a worse run out through the first 8 weeks. But if he does get back on track, and I just think everything with the Bears offense prior to that, I just really think that Thursday night loss, and again, I have no idea if it was the Ryan Fitzpatrick, like, kind of laying into Luke Getsy after the game, if that was like the inflection point of, like, Luke Getsy's like, wow, I can't have Ryan Fitzpatrick talking that mean about me after Thursday. I got to get in the lab here. But everything about that offense has been different since that point. So it's like everything before then you can kind of throw out. And now I think guys like Mooney are on the radar. I think guys like Cole Kmet can get back on the radar because that is a change inflection point there within the season. Let's get negative. Let's talk about guys we're dropping. You have Aaron Rodgers, which I think we've explained why you need to go ahead and drop Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. If you're still hanging on, I just got nothing for you. I mean, he had the get right spot, and they got a little bit worse, right? Like they had the matchup with Detroit, and you were like, okay, Aaron Rodgers is going to fix his season. This is going to be good. Dobbs is a start. Lazard is a start. This is going to be great. It's just a miserable game. One of the worst of his career. He was off. The receiving core is, you know, got a little bit more injured. I got no hope. I have no. We talked about it at the top of the show when discussing Dobbs. Like, I don't have an answer for you. Like, Dobbs goes down, and I don't have a guy to recommend because there's nothing there I want. And Rodgers just been bad. Like, he came into week 9, and he hadn't thrown for more than 255 yards in any game this season. I would never project him to eclipse that in any game for the remainder of the season because it's just a terrible group of receivers. He is playing poorly. He's probably playing through injury. It's just a miserable spot. And you're going to see the name on your bench, and you're going to be like, man, Aaron Rodgers, maybe I should start it. Like, he's good. He's an MVP. Maybe I should just get him off the roster so you don't have to sweat it.
Yeah, that's a good call. I'm also telling you to drop any non-Cooper Kupp Rams. That includes the wide receivers. That includes it. Tyler Higbee, I think, is kind of off the every week start radar at tight end. That is including the running backs as well. Again, if you need to, like, you can hang on to a guy like Allen Robinson. You can hang on to a guy like Daryl Henderson. But like everybody else, I don't think it's there. And I mean, it's not going to happen for really those two guys consistently either. So if you need to make a drop for somebody else, like, you can go ahead and do it. I mean, Van Jefferson, I was excited about Van Jefferson's return because he was going to be the deep guy. Well, yesterday he had one drop, but otherwise he had a crushing drop. But other than that, 134 air yards and zero real yards. Like, and those air yards are the one drop is on him. The other ones, those are all prayer yards. Okay. Like they were not even close. The Rams are, you know, just as broken as the Packers and just as like, I don't know what the future looks like for the Packers, and I don't know what the hell the future looks like for the Rams because they're kind of locked into like some of these guys, Allen Robinson included. Like, he's going to be on this team next year. Cooper Kupp obviously going to be on the team next year, but like all these guys for the rest of the season, like, you know, Ben Skoranek, 3 yard average depth of target, Tyler Higbee, 3 air yards per target. You know, Robinson's at 8.4, Jefferson meaninglessly all there up at 26.8. This offensive line is just, like, every game the Rams have the same sequence. I talked about it last night, Andy. It's promising play immediately followed by a back-breaking sack on second down, and then like a white flag play on third down, and I don't know how that changes. So you can just go ahead and like Cam Akers, get him off your roster. Daryl Henderson, get him off your roster. Kyren Williams, who gives a damn? All these receivers, who cares?
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Like, Higbee's season took quite a turn because, like, 6 weeks into the year, Higbee had seen a zillion targets. Like, he was right there with Andrews and Kelsey in terms of targets. And you were like, oh man, at some point he's going to find the end zone. And then it was Higbee 2 weeks ago that had the crushing drop that turned the Rams game around, right? Like, just terrible drop that would have been a walk-in touchdown. He could still be running. Obviously
the only thing with the Higbee volume early in the year was like, again, like 3 yards, air yards per target. Like, that was happening then too. And it's like, these targets are going nowhere. I mean, I know they're going into your fantasy box score and like that looks nice at a position like tight end, but they were awful targets for the offense. And it's like, okay, I can't keep doing that forever.
Yeah. No, it was a lot of desperate. It's a lot of Matt Stafford not having any time to throw sort of targets, but that was going to be a problem all year. And I don't know. I feel like there's going to be some empty catches, empty yardage games for Higbee going forward, but so I'll probably have him ranked in that like tight end 10 to 12 range, but I totally agree with you on not needing to roster any of these guys outside of Kupp. Certainly not Stafford.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, if you still have Stafford on your team, sorry about, good luck next year, basically, if you still have Stafford on your team. Hold on loosely, candidates. Andy, you've got Michael Pittman, who we talked about a lot at the opener.
Yeah, and I'd actually thrown him in the outline for this pod before we had the Frank Reich news and the Jeff Saturday news. I don't even know what to say about Pittman. I don't have a good story to tell you. He's just so good. I'd love to think that we're going to settle into Michael Pittman just getting fed in December. I hope that's the case. I'd give him a few more chances because I just think he's a phenomenal player, but he is going to fall outside of the circle of trust in terms of people that you can actually start each week. Like, I don't know. I got a bunch of receivers coming back off a bye that I'm pretty interested in taking a look at. I've got some leagues where we only have to start two receivers, and I had Pittman, and I don't know that I'm going to be playing. Am I going to play him ahead of Juju? No. I'm thinking about a handful of rosters right now, and it's going to be a coin flip call on some of them. I just absolutely love him as a player, and when they get a real quarterback next year, I'm going to be excited about Michael Pittman all over again. I still think, again, he can have some volume games, but... the whole offense a rough watch right now.
Yeah, he feels like the poster child bench don't drop guy at this point. Michael Pittman does. That feels right to me. I would go with that. Oh man, it's sad. Do you think Sam Ellinger starts the rest of the season, or like, are we going to see Matt Ryan again? Are we going to see Nick Foles, for God's sakes? And like, does any of that? I think Ellinger is probably the worst case scenario for Pittman. I don't know.
I think he is as well. I think it would be a small boost to him if we actually did see Nick Foles. But the team is also pretty clearly committed to losing, right? There's no way you do any of the things that they've just done without a commitment to the tank. So it's probably...
Foles will help. Behind that offensive line, he will help.
Foles would not be a problem in that regard, yeah. I feel like Pittman is good enough. Jonathan Taylor, who we talked about earlier, good enough to maybe accidentally win you a game. So I do really think that there's a serious possibility that Taylor gets shut down. I doubt they would do that with a receiver.
You'd have to actually be hurt first. That would be nice. I get to make it look somewhat excusable, but who knows? Who knows, man? My hold on loosely candidate is the Washington football team running backs. Don't drop those guys. They're another one bench don't drop, because I know the final finish wasn't very good last week, but you know, JD McKissick, we'll see. He had to see a neck specialist last week. Like, if we do get this back, we'll cut down from 3 to 2. It'll be good long term. Again, two guys you bench and you don't drop. Getting in early, Andy, we both have guys who are not currently allowed to play football for two entirely different reasons. One medically, one not so much medically. You've got Deshaun Watson. I've got Odell Beckham. We can have a little bit more of a longer conversation about Beckham, but hit us with Watson first.
Yeah, a pretty simple argument. I mean, like, I totally understand anybody who just wants to steer clear of Deshaun Watson and thinking about Deshaun Watson's case and all that. I totally get it. He's rostered right now in 27% of Yahoo leagues. He's obviously very good at quarterbacking NFL teams. He's going to step right in week 13. He's going to be allowed to practice ahead of week 13. So it's not like he's coming in cold. And he'll have a team that might have David Njoku back, that is going to have Amari Cooper, but has Nick Chubb in the backfield. Like, it can be a good offense with Deshaun Watson. And he's going to play in week 13. So he's going to be on somebody's fantasy roster. And again, he's widely available right now.
Jay Glazer seems to think, like he reported on Sunday, that Odell Beckham could be cleared kind of any time to come back from his knee injury, which, you know, we'll see. He's still got to be signed. It sounds like the Cowboys are kind of moving up in terms of the potential landing spot, which makes a ton of sense, by the way. Like, Michael Gallup is another guy coming back really early from an ACL. I don't think he's looked 100% so far this year. He's been fine, but I don't think he's looked 100%. CeeDee Lamb's like their only game breaker, and he actually really hasn't like had a game breaking type of game, at least in fantasy. But they could certainly use the help. I just think like we're kind of getting close to stash Beckham season. But I still think there's a chance he makes no impact. I just kind of wanted to like get your thoughts on like where he would fit. Where would you like to see him? Where he would fit best? Like what's the next team for Odell Beckham, or what should it be?
Yeah, well, I think it's meaningful and obvious that the all of the teams that have been linked to Odell Beckham are playoff contenders, and not just playoff contenders.
Ain't going back to the Rams anymore, I'll tell you that.
No, he's definitely not going back to the Rams, but it's been like, you know, the Bills and the Cowboys and the Ravens, who have an obvious need for somebody like Odell. But I still believe, especially given the timing of his injury, like it was a Super Bowl injury. So like the timing of it would suggest to me that he's not going to be ready to be anything close to fully operational, like in December. That they'd probably want to get his feet wet a little bit and get him comfortable with an offense late in December. And then they intend for, you know, whatever team signs Odell is going to intend for him to be a factor, like as they get to like the divisional round, right? And on through like the most important weeks of the real life season. I'm skeptical that he's going to make any kind of fantasy splash, but I do recognize that he has a lot of brand name value. So it could very well be that like Odell is just a guy that you add And you think of him as like a trade sweetener at your fantasy trade deadline, because he has a lot of appeal to a lot of people.
Especially if because the Chiefs are still in contention, by the way. Like, and we've seen how things have gone, like Kadarius Toney added in mass, right? And he, like, we're talking about Odell Beckham versus Kadarius Toney. Give me a freaking
Kadarius Toney went from something like 15% rostered to like 55% rostered in a minute, in like, you know, within a day, hundreds of thousands of ads. Yeah.
Simply because of the Chiefs. So if he goes to Kansas City, I love that idea as like a trade sweetener. And by the way, wow, what a mucked up receiving core that would be if he ends up there. But again, I think most of his real value will come in December, late in December, maybe just January, pure playoffs. And for that reason, like, my pick for where I'd like to see him go, I like the Dallas idea, and it certainly would be like, oh my God, just headlines on headlines on headlines. You just anybody out there who's like in sports media at all, just go ahead and mute notifications from your editor. You don't want to be hearing that. Sorry, Jason. But I think the team I'd like to see him with the most is Baltimore, because they need help the most, and he really is the thing that they're missing at this point. So because it won't make a big deal for fantasy, I think regardless, either way, let's get Odell to Baltimore and help Lamar out, for God's sakes. Like, we can't really be making a playoff push with Devin Duvernay and DeMarcus Robinson. And
DeMarcus Robinson, Jackson. James Prochet. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, you can't really be doing that. All right, Andy, it's time for our weekly updates on the Treviso Babes. And my God, we have a lot to discuss with the Treviso Babes. Just when I kind of said last week, like, they're getting their act together, things have gone absolutely insane. Since I said on last week's pod, November 1st podcast came out. So the day before that, like, oh, they kind of getting it together. The only crazy thing, was the DK Metcalf drop. We got a lot of crazy drops to discuss here. We're not even going to play any guessing games. We'll just go through them. But before we do that, my mom's real good friend, Leslie, who I talked about dropping DK Metcalf, on the past episode, she sent in an audio clip defending herself for the DK Metcalf drop, because she was not happy that we had a few words on the situation. Let's hear what Leslie had to say.
Love it.
Hi, Leslie Sisla here, and I'm one of the team managers in the Treviso Babes Fantasy League. Well, rumor has it that there have been some rumblings by the experts because of one of my recent wide receiver drops. Yep, I dropped DK Metcalf. Before I get into that, let me start by saying I grew up in the South. I love watching SEC football. I'm an Alabama fan through and through, even when we're having down years like this one. With only a couple of notable exceptions, my fantasy team is stacked with lots of Alabama players. And if I can't pick up an Alabama player, then I like to pick up former SEC players, just like DK. So wide receivers, I love, love, love fast wide receivers. In fact, I have Tyreek Hill on my team. So why would I drop DK? Well, he had a couple of disappointing showings back to back, which both required him to be carted off the field. So in the first one, he had garnered 4.4 fantasy points for my team, and he was carted off due to the call of nature in a very inconvenient time. Yes, it was disappointing, but I understood. He's human. And then the following week, he garnered 1.7 fantasy points for my team, and he was carted off only after the second play of the game. So Pete Carroll described that injury as a hurt patella, and that it may be related to an old injury. So here I have a fast wide receiver with a potential knee injury, 2 weeks of unpredictable drama. Okay, not the kind of wide receive drama of yesteryear, like the TOs of the world, Ocho Cinco's, Randy Moss, or even more recently, Antonio Brown. It was just a little unpredictable. Sure, I could have benched DK, but I dropped him and I picked up Julio Jones. Back to my tendencies. I'm a sentimental Alabama fan, and Julio changed our program in 2008. If there's a chance he's going to play, I'm going to pick him up and put him on my bench. So I like the Brady-Jones tandem. I mean, it's the last hurrah for these guys, and I would love to see them really go out in style. So if I have to give up a guy on my bench to do that, I'm happy to do it. And despite my Bama SEC tendencies, I've managed to stay relevant in our Treviso Babes fantasy league. I've been number one a couple of weeks. I've been number two a couple of weeks. And I'm going to take a hit this week because Mixon had like a ridiculous game. And Mahomes had a ridiculous game. So, yeah, I'm going to take a bit of a hit, but I'm going to stay relevant with my Bama SEC tendencies.
Well, Lot to unpack there from Leslie. Shout out to Leslie for sending that in.
I love, first of all, that she gives us the background on what qualities she likes and dislikes in a player, and it turns out that DK like checks every box that she likes and still drafts him. I absolutely love it. He is currently a much faster human than Julio Jones, but like on the other hand, I do respect, you know, this is what goes on in hometown leagues, and like you have to like the team that you've rostered, right? Like I get that. I get keeping Julio on the bench perhaps as like a mascot because you have really fond memories of Julio. I do not I would not dismiss DK Metcalf as merely some dude on the bench who was replaceable.
Yeah, for sure. But a couple things here for Leslie. You know, my big takeaways. Number one, she kind of got bamboozled by Poopgate with DK Metcalf in the cart.
Yes.
I get that. That's a problem. I totally understand that. I also, you know, look, you want, like Andy said, sentimental value. You want, by the way, Leslie's contending heading into this week. She's the second place team. She's 6-2. Like her team is good. So we don't mean to sit here and question Leslie's judgment. She wants to carry Julio Jones to a ring. I totally get it. That's fine. You know, I mean, you got to have your mascot. A great way to say it. And my other thing here is, man, look, she got screwed by Pete Carroll. Okay. Pete Carroll coming out and like with his mysterious injury thing, you know, that's on Pete, Leslie. That's not on you. So look, Leslie's got a good team. She's competing. She does have Tyreek Hill. She's got the Tyreek Hill Tua stack. She knows what she's doing. All right. She dropped DK Metcalf. I get that. But I think that was a pretty good defense, all things considered.
I will also say that when like it's easy now, a couple weeks later, to look back at Metcalf and say, well, you know, and gloss over the injury. At the time it happened, like in the exact moment that we got word that it was actually a knee injury and he didn't just have to poop again, like it seemed like it might be a season ender, right?
Yeah.
And then after the game, the relatively good news, the sunshine that Pete Carroll was spitting, kind of made you think, okay, maybe it's only 3 or 4 weeks. 3 or 4 weeks is a long time within the context of a fantasy season and in a relatively shallow league where people are churning a lot of players. I get it.
Say that.
It is only now that we know that DK like came back, scored a touchdown, and all that it seems like a silly drop. But it was, you know, in the moment, it actually made a little bit more sense.
It absolutely made sense. All right. So shout out to Leslie for that. Leslie, again, is one of my mom's,
thank you,
like closest friends down there. And we appreciate you, Leslie. And she is like, she legit knows her stuff. Diehard football fan. Like, and I respect just like, hey, I like Alabama. I'm just going to go ahead and add Alabama players. Going to do the SEC thing. Shout out to that. That's great stuff. We do have to cover a few other pieces of business here about this league, though, Andy, because we can't play any guessing games. Like since that podcast, like I said, where I thought, okay, these folks are getting their act together, right? Like these drops are getting better. No, things went absolutely crazy since November 1st. These are the players that have been dropped in this league. And by the way, there's been more. These are just like the highlights. Cortland Sutton, Brandon Ayuk, shout out to Leslie, by the way, dropped Julio Jones, enough with the sentimentality, and picked up Brandon Ayuk. Like that call, Leslie.
Elite move.
We're going to continue to elite, just elite stuff. Look, no hometown discounts. None of that sentimentality crap. We're going to get Julio Jones limping out of here, and we're going to get Brandon Ayuk. Love that for Leslie. George Pickens has been dropped. All those three receivers going to their bye weeks. We know that these folks hate bye weeks.
Yes.
Patrick Mahomes coming out of his bye week. Our girl Tammy, Andy, dropped Mahomes, and I have no clue why. She had to start Taylor Heinicke last week. I you know, my mom's like, how can Tammy get Patrick Mahomes back on our team? I'm like, you got to try to add him on waivers, I guess, but that's no guarantee you're going to get him.
Usually if you're the team that dropped him, you can't add him on waivers, right? Like you've got to wait for him to clear.
Correct.
Obviously Patrick Mahomes is not going to clear. Literally leads the NFL in passing yards and passing touchdowns and has all of the points. this is like, it feels like that must have been accidental. We might need an audio clip from Tammy.
Yeah, we need to hear from Tammy. I mean, she's in 9th place, 3-5. It's not going well for Tammy. Like I said, she scored 41 points last week.
Maybe it was one of those. Do we think that Tammy is the sort to like just drop her best players and be like, "I'm going to detonate this league. I'm dropping Mahomes.
She was desperately. She's the one that added Antonio Brown, as we remember. And then conveniently pushed it off on somebody else. She's like, "Oh, my friend had my phone." I don't even know what the hell that explanation was, Tammy. I mean, come on. You're our girl, and this happens. I mean, again. You can tell she was spinning her wheels afterwards because, like I said, she's trying to figure out how to. I was like, "You're out of luck. You can't add him on the waivers. It just is what it is." She added the following quarterbacks after. She got Ryan Tannehill on the roster, Mac Jones, Derek Carr, Taylor Heineke. She's like, she's just throwing things at the wall, seeing what sticks after this disaster. So I do feel bad for Tammy, who is going to lose unless Juwan Johnson scores 50 points tonight on Monday Night Football. So. We shall see. I'm not done yet, by the way. Julie, another Treviso babe that we love, she dropped Tom Brady to add Patrick Mahomes. Probably a good move there.
Yeah.
My mom, Leslie dropped Zach Ertz. Don't know what that was about. My mom grabbed him, dropped Brandon Cooks because she has 50 receivers. And then just a couple LOL ones. Kadarius Toney got dropped in this league, I guess, which doesn't make any sense because everybody's adding Kadarius Toney. So it's like, someone added him and then is like, "Oh, you know what? Bye week, get him out of here." Like, what the hell? And then somebody dropped Deshaun Watson, which, like, also, LOL, this is the time to be adding him. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, hasn't been relevant. I understand why he wasn't on a roster earlier this season. He's about to be relevant. The Ertz thing is just, man, Leslie is such a what have you done for me lately? Not even what have you done for me lately. Like, what did you do for me today? And if it wasn't, if it wasn't like a touchdown and 80 yards, you are on the chopping block. You are a candidate for a drop.
Yeah, Leslie did run into some bad luck. Zach Ertz would not have saved her. By the way, she also has Travis Kelce. So, like, who cares? You know, she can go ahead and drop old Zach Ertz. That did help my mom out, who unfortunately also ran into Davante Adams, not going to win this week, but at least was able to put a competent player the tight end.
Do we have
spot.
Trades in this league? Like, has a trade gone down?
Oh, man. No, not a single trade. Not a single trade all year.
Just dropping superstar players right and left. Patrick Mahomes, the freaking MVP of the league, getting dropped. Sure.
I don't know who this Terry's Tenacious team is, but they're 7-1. They're running. I don't know Terry. Not familiar with their work. But they're running away with this league. They're 7-1. They're easily in first place. Scored a ton of points. Squeaked out a close one this past week, but they've got Kenneth Walker. They've got Christian Kirk, Stephon Diggs. They have Nick Chubb. They just dropped Sammy Watkins. So, great, get that poison pill off your roster. This league really went off the freaking rails right after I said, like, okay, I think they're kind of getting their stuff together. The ladies have gone crazy, but we love to see it.
Yeah, we might have to get like, I don't know, whoever wins this title might need to get a like, I don't know, preview pod guest appearance for week 18, something like that. That seems fair.
I think that does seem fair. Well, I'll get that on the actually tomorrow, Andy. I forgot I didn't tell you this. My mom is setting up like a Zoom call with me and all of these ladies for like a 30-minute, 1-hour Q&A. I don't know what to expect, but you're on the preview podcast this week, right?
Oh my gosh. You gotta record that.
Yeah, I'm 100% not recording it, but I will let you know what happens with this because it could be quite an hour.
Leslie, Tammy, somebody's got to record that. One of you guys has to record this.
I'll report back on the Treviso Babes League after my 1-hour little Q&A with them. I mean, the least I could do. They've given us so much content. Lord Podcast was like, we need to send them like a trophy or something for whoever wins the league. Like, I got to get on that. Like Yahoo swag or something. Can we send them? Like, do we have stuff we can send them? Like, they've given us so much good content. So, I hope the people enjoy their weekly.
I mean, I think you could put that behind the paywall at Reception Perception. There's a lot you could do with that little Q&A.
There you go. That's a good point there. All right. That is going to do it for us. Packed show this week. Lots of stuff. Lots of laughs. Shout out again to Leslie for sending that audio in. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Behrens if you don't already. If you don't, what the hell are you doing with yourself, man? Come on. You can follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, make yourself a better fantasy player and improve your timeline by following at Yahoo Fantasy. Trevor's coming back from his honeymoon, so that account's about to get a lot better again. Mo, Jason, you did your best. Let's get Trevor back in the building there. Austin Eckler back in the building will be with us tomorrow. We'll talk about his 2-touchdown performance in another close Chargers victory on the latest episode of Eckler's Edge tomorrow. Until then, we're out.